as soon as I get a phone, I'll take your address and put it in my book so I can let you know where I'm going to be. And then you can come out there and stay over a weekend, maybe, probably. And we can go into lots of things. And as soon as I get a phone, I'll take your address and put it in my book so I can let you know where I'm going to be. And then you can come out there and stay over a weekend, maybe, probably. And we can go into lots of things, you know. For instance, on the farm in Montana where my father bought a section of land, and he raised Danpach racehorses and hogs. And he was about the only farmer in the country that was existing. Most of them were just, you know, going out of business. They were just not able to live. And there's just a lot of things, you know, that one can talk about. You can pick out what you want to really go into. And you listen to the tape and you can make notes. Pick out what you want to. And certain years, you know, maybe would be more important to you than other years. You know, like the years during World War II, my husband was drafted into service, and he worked in the Transportation Corps of the Army, and he was 3.5 years on the island of New Guinea, and they loaded and unloaded all kinds of mostly ammunition and fuel for airplanes and boats, what have you. And just before he left, my oldest son was born. And when he came home, he was almost 3 years old. And then Larry was born, and then my youngest son was born. Larry's 33, and my youngest son is 31. And then the older one is older because his father was gone, of course. In those days, we didn't have anything to, you know, we didn't have the pill like we have today. They want that kind of thing probably on the tape, but we didn't have anything much to tape, you know. It's hard to keep from having children. Although we wanted a girl, so we kept trying, you know. He wanted a girl so badly. But we raised my granddaughter. I've put away all my pictures, but I can show them to you, you know, another time. And Larry has 3 children. He has a boy, 15, and a girl, 13, and a boy, 7, but he's separated from his wife. She is a Mexican woman, and she's a very nice person. Her and I go to swap meets together and work together, and the kids are here an awful lot. You know, they like to come to Grandma's house, and we want to take them with us up to Lake Elsinore, because Larry's mobile home is going to have 4 bedrooms. He'll have his 2 children and his I think he's going to get married to this woman he's going with. And she has 2 children.
So he's going to be moving to Elsinore also?
Oh, yes. And he has a van. And he will come down here and he will longshore. He has only 10 years until he can retire. And he's an expert mechanic. But, of course, longshoring, he works. Each night he works, he makes over $100, and he's now driving a jitney. But he worked in the hole most of the time. His father worked, had a gang for over 20 years, had his own gang, and he was a winch driver. And he taught the boys how to drive the winches, you know, all 4 of the boys that are working. But Larry doesn't like it, and my other son doesn't like it, and so my other son is driving the big crane. Larry doesn't like that either, so he's driving jitneys, which is more simple. And he doesn't like and be way up in the air or involve stuff. He likes more simple things. It's less money, but it's he's not one to be glamorous or whatever you might say. He's He's very sharp. He had to quit school, though. His little brother got so very sick, he had to quit high school and go to work. And he was shot. He got shot through his bowel. There's a bullet still lays in the back of his kidney, and he never could play football, and that was just what he wanted to do. Their father had been a boxer, and when he came from Hawaii, he had been boxing over there, and came over here as a welterweight boxer, and he could have been a welterweight champion if he had had the right kind of a manager. He was a very good fighter. But after I started going with him, I made him quit fighting. Only when he was in the Army he fought. Because to me, coming from a family like my father's, who are nonviolent, you know, boxing to me was very vulgar and seemed to his face all beat up. I couldn't stand that, and it did affect it, because later on he became an alcoholic, and he would get the time, so he didn't know what he was doing. So I kept my son from being at all interested in boxing and things like that. They were square dancers and dancers, and they all had instruments. Larry plays an accordion, his older brother plays an electric bass, and the little boy plays the organ there, and he plays a steel guitar. And we had a little band of our own until my little son got real sick. And the reason he got real sick, the doctors say, the ones in Mexico who saved his life, one is German and one is two a Mexican doctor. They claim that that he got this kidney infection because I gave him hot chocolate to drink every night, and it affected his kidneys. And he had such a high fever that it ate the fluid out of his joints. So his hips, finally with cortisone and the children's hospital, they fused his hips. And one, his left leg didn't grow as big as the other, his right leg. But he's fairly good now, but he has a lot of pain all the time. But he's very big in his chest like his father. He was bigger than Larry before he got sick. He was about that much taller, and he's younger. But I have one son that is, I put away all the pictures. My third child is the one that is not living. He died in 1943 on graduation day from high school. He broke his neck at Cabela Beach diving in the surf. But all my other children are living. And then I raised my granddaughter, and she has three children. She has two of her own and one adopted. So I have, I've got three and three, six. Well, anyway, I counted up my grandchildren. I can't remember all of them. My oldest son has three, and my daughter has three. Her son has four. Ten. I think I have 13 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren. My mother had 26 grandchildren and 67 great-grandchildren and 3 great-great-great-grandchildren. She was 90 years old when she died. And I took her to Mexico. She had been going to Mexico and doctoring for a long time. My sister does doctor down there, because she has bad legs. She's been a retail clerk, sit on her legs all her life. My mother had cancer for about 45 years, but they kept it down. She had a bad tonsils, and they kept it in control. And finally, I took her to the Contreras Clinic, and for 18 months we used Laetrile, and Laetrile really works. kept her real good till she finally got too cold. One night we took her to the doctor and we had car trouble. She got too cold. It rained. It was cold. And she got pneumonia, and that's what killed her, pneumonia. Usually, cancer patients, if they go down to Mexico and if they use Laetrile, they usually don't die of cancer. They die of something else, like pneumonia or something else other than that. And I had her at the hospital down there for 28 days, and then I brought her home, and I took care of her. That's the kind of home. We went down every 3 months and got her medicine. She saw the doctor. They took x-rays, and she had it on top of her lungs. When I took her down there, she had pneumonia, and she had a kidney infection. And they had that cleared up in 3 or 4 days, except the pneumonia, that took time. Kidney infection was cleared up that way. So, Laetrile does work. They, of course, up here, you know, they say it doesn't work, but it does. And just 1 month before I began to bring home her medicine, they made a deal with the with California that we could bring it in by paying a duty on it. So we brought her medicine in. After she passed away, I took medicine back that she didn't use. You have no trouble going into Mexico. It's only coming out. Our border patrol is tough, you know. They're afraid that they're always looking for drugs. Well, you know, we bring home medications with prescriptions, and we declare them, and it's all right. You can bring them in, but you've got if you don't declare them, and they find them, they take them away from you. Even if you've got prescriptions. So my mother died in January of this year, and we had her cremated, and her ashes are scattered out by her house over the ocean. And we had a memorial for her, that was all. Most of my brothers and sisters were there, their wives and husbands. Not all. There was one that there was a couple of them that couldn't be there, and grandchildren. There were just so many of them were there. But all of my brothers and sisters are living. Some of them live in Oregon now. Some of them live here in California. I have a brother that my oldest brother just had a open heart surgery a few months ago. And all of my brothers played football. They played here in San Pedro, they played in San Diego State College, and they played in Compton Junior College. But my son didn't, my youngest boy was a track, the one that died, he was a track man. He was a 3/4 mile, Belgium Attitude. Well, I don't know what much more to tell you unless you want to ask some questions or something special that you'd like to know.
There's something I agree with you. You said that you lived in Terminal Island, and I know that there was also a place called Fish Harbor, and I think that's where a lot of families were. Is this the place you lived in, or any?
Yes, Terminal Island and Fish mm-hmm. Harbor. Is the same thing. They call it Fish Harbor because the fish all came into the canneries, you know, at the docks there. But it's Terminal Island.
Okay. Was the house you lived in Terminal Island owned by the canneries?
Yes, the canneries owned all the houses there. The house we lived in happened to be owned by the cannery we worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And all the little shacks that the Japanese people lived in, they also was owned by the cannery. Yeah, they owned everything over there at that mm-hmm. time. Because we had no union, and we had, you know, there was no independence. Mm-hmm. You almost lived where they told you to live. Of course, we lived there because we wanted to be there. And it was a small little house. It wasn't big at all. It was very small. And it was on Terminal Way. And there was houses all along that street where officials of the canneries lived, mostly. Like, my husband was a fishroom superintendent, and my father was a cooker, and then above us was other people. And the Japanese people that lived next to us, the man was some official in one of the unions, in one of the canneries, but I don't know what cannery he was in anymore. I don't remember. But I know that he was an official. And mostly in those houses was either Mexican or white. Mainly they were Caucasians. Very few Japanese lived in those houses. The Japanese were all clumped in this one little place, you know, in little shacks. And we didn't, you know, we talked about it, we discussed it, we didn't like the way they were being treated. They'd narrow little streets between their houses and just little small alleys. And sides of the class. Little small alleys where they'd go between the houses. Waiting for me to see him. That's why you want to eat, don't you? You can't. No. He's friendly with everybody. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are very much afraid of those big dogs. Mm. But they are Siberian huskies, mm-hmm. and they don't bite. Yeah, he has bit one man that hurt him, oh. and he bit him. But they're not fighters, they're lovers. But he's afraid of my chair. He'll come to me if my chair is down. Every once in a while he comes and my chair goes down. We love them almost like children.